means it's Saturday night, and that means on KABC, it's Open Mind. And that means that we're going to open your mind into something dramatically new tonight. You've learned to expect that from us, haven't you, from time to time? Something brand new from some old, old friends. Source of the information, an older, old friend. But with all of that, a lot of research and a lot of things to think about. Welcome in. I'm Bill Jenkins. Open Mind is the story, and we're going to talk about the... Are you ready for this? The threshold of immortality. You know, you're right there. You're right there, according to our guest tonight, that immortality is not that far away. Now, I know that people have searched for that time from the beginning of time. Certainly they should search for it because it was a part of their heritage. We have heard of Ponce de Leon, we've heard of this, we've heard of that, but you're going to hear something else about that tonight. Our guest, Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden. We know them so very well because they have written one of the most challenging books of our time. It's one of those must books that be in your should be in your library, called Heirs of the Gods. Vivian, welcome tonight to Open Mind.
Thank you, Bill. It's wonderful to be back home again.
Back home again. There you are.
Yeah.
Before we get into Heirs of the Gods and some of the marvelous research, the fascinating research that has led you and Lee to, and Lee will be in here in just a moment with us, I want to take a moment to talk to Octavia Butler. Octavia, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
Fine.
Octavia is with us tonight because, as you know, KABC has been very involved in a project to save the books.
Yes, yes.
We lost so many of
Good evening, Octavia.
Evening.
We lost so many of our books in the Central Library this last summer with the two arson fires that were going on down there in the midst of efforts to renovate and reconstruct the library. And Octavia, you write books.
I write science fiction. And not only that, the library was a kind of second home to me before the fires.
Oh, well, you know, it was a home to so many people. I don't know whether you have had an opportunity to listen to some of the essays that the people from all walks of life have written and sent in to us in our contest that we had, what a library means to you. But while we have you on the line, Octavia, what does a library mean to you?
Oh, it means not only a place to go and get information, but because I write, I'm working alone most of the time. And a library is the place that I go when the walls start to close in. When I get a little stir-crazy around my office, I go to the library and work, and I talk to the people there, and I kind of get a renewal from it.
You get a renewal from those stained old carpets and...
Well, no, there were no carpets at that library, thank heavens.
As a matter of fact,
people at News Magazine had decided to do an article on me last year, and they asked where I would like my picture taken, and I had it taken there at the library. So...
Did you find things at the library that helped you in your writing of science fiction stories?
Things and people, really. I had a habit of sitting in a corner someplace where there were books on at least two sides of me and just staring at titles and coming up with ideas.
Hmm.
And also, some of the people there, well, they're very well read. They're interested in books themselves, and it's great to talk to them. You can get ideas just from talking to them.
A library is sort of a must for our society, wouldn't you say?
Essential.
Absolutely.
For one thing, it's free. And it was the place that I almost learned to read, really. When I went into school, I was very bored and dissatisfied, and although I didn't know it at the time, dyslexic.
Mm-hmm.
I wound up spending a lot of time at the library because basically they let me alone there and let me go at my own pace. And not only did I learn to read well, but I learned to enjoy stories so much that I wound up writing them. By the time I was 10 years old, I was writing my own stories.
Since you were 10?
Yes.
From the library?
Well, at the library, really. I used to take a notebook and go and sit there and spend Saturday or whenever.
How many science fiction stories have you written, Octavia?
I do mostly novels for economic reasons, mainly.
Well, that's a good reason.
Short stories they sell, but they don't bring in that much money, although my awards have been in short stories. I have seven novels done. The seventh one will be published in April of next year.
Mm-hmm. What kind of science fiction stories did you write?
Unfortunately, it's called soft science fiction. That is to say, science fiction about people rather than about machines.
Well, I think that really is the best kind of science fiction.
Mm-hmm. I think the terminology is denigrating, but I think that the science fiction itself, I think stories should be about people, should tell us something about ourselves, instead of using the people as in effect, using the people as machines.
Yeah, you can read about a bunch of tubes and all kinds of technology. But the real story is how the people are using it or not
right.
using it or right. misusing it.
How they're reacting to it. How it's affecting their lives.
And how they're interrelating and evolving in the midst of all of these things that supposedly are doing work for them or doing things to them.
Mm-hmm.
Where would we find your books, Octavia?
Well, before it burned, you could have found them all at the main library.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, now, some of the branches have them. Also, I have, as I said, a book called Dawn, D-A-W-N, coming out in April of next year. And my other books will be reprinted slowly by Warner.
Mm-hmm. There they are. Well, we have two authors here in studio with us tonight, and I might as well get their comments about the library. Doctors Lee Gladden and Vivian Gladden. Say hello to Octavia Butler.
Hello.
Did you find yourself in the library much, Lee, in the research that you did?
Yes, we did. We used the downtown library and the L.A. Graduate Research Library both almost incessantly.
Interesting, Bill. I really almost stowed away in the research library at UCLA one evening.
Mm-hmm.
Take a lunch and then take a break, go out on the lawn. And when it got time to close, I just couldn't leave. I didn't feel like leaving. I couldn't leave. And I thought, if I just had a flashlight and a blanket, I'd make a pallet in the corner, seriously, and just sit in here all night and sleep here. And just, I mean, that's the extent of really the kind of research that we did. I really lived in the library.
But the fire was a great tragedy,
yes,
and we
yes.
got used that library a great deal.
Well, I hope they're going to find your book back in there.
Well, I hope so, too. In fact, I think it was not destroyed in the fire.
Oh. Did the fire get your books, Octavia?
No, I don't believe it did. When I volunteered there right after the fire, and I noticed that the fiction room was intact, at least on in the reading area.
Mm-hmm.
So my books apparently came out of it all right. I don't know about the second fire, although the location of the music room was far enough from the fiction room that I don't think that my books would have been damaged.
Well, I hope not. I hope not, and I thank you very much for spending some time with us, Octavia.
Well,
congratulations on your foray into science fiction. I hope you listen to the Drs. Gladden tonight,
uh-huh.
because they're dealing with what some people might call science fiction, but it seems to be more science fact as we get into
science
it.
Science fact.
Deeper and deeper, although it does boggle the imagination, what we're going to hear.
Okay.
All right?
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Octavia.
Good evening, Octavia.
Good evening.
Octavia Butler. And I thank you very much for joining us as a part of our effort here to save the books, certainly to save the library, and to save the minds, and perhaps acquaint minds with something that can be found only at a library.
Absolutely.
You know, there are only so many things that we can do at KABC to challenge your mind and to get it thinking and to get it whirling. But from there, you know, we've just thrown down the gauntlet, and you have to take it from there and do something. And unless you happen to have a great library in your own home, the only other library available to you is the one that is provided by the people. And, of course, Los Angeles had provided themselves with one of the finest libraries in the world, and that has been severely damaged, but hopefully it's on its way. The cost, $161 million. To replace that. And, of course, there are so many things that were lost in that tragic arson fire. Well, there were two of them. Yes. They cannot be replaced, and there's no way to put a price tag on it, and what a shame it was. But perhaps, as it is in life, all things happen for a reason, that this will pinpoint the great need for the library, the great need for people of all stations of life to bury themselves down there from time to time and find out what an exciting place the mind can be, because what you find there in those books are things that make the mind run amok and do marvelous things, from create to just simply enjoy. And it can't be done in movie theaters, and it can't be done in front of television sets or listening to radios. It can only be done in the recesses of the mind, and the greatest trigger for that activity is the written word, and the greatest collection of the written word that we have is the library. We want to thank all of you that have been so cooperative with us here at KABC in this past month in pointing the attention to it, the money that you have pledged to save the books and to save the library, and the essays that you have written about the importance of the library. So the things that were written by the 7th and 8th graders were fascinating. I don't know if you've had a chance to hear some of them that we've been airing on the air. We've got thousands of them. These little people are brilliant.
Wonderful.
They are bright. They have a command of the language. They have a visualization of what's going on that is hard to conceive. They're writing about the library in terms that I tell you most of my adult peers are not able to do.
Yeah.
So I'm very proud of the young people, and they seem to miss the library the most.
Their perception is pure.
Yes. Yeah. That's what it is. Well, okay, we've spent some time with that. It's very important. Again, we thank Octavia Butler and all of the people that have contributed to our effort to save the books here at KABC. But we want to talk about another book here in just a second and where that has led. And we're on the threshold of immortality, is what Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden want you to understand, and we'll get into that very thought-provoking idea in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins on KABC Talk Radio 79.
You know, if you're going to rent or buy metaphysical video, why not go to the place with the largest selection in Southern California, Alexandria 2 Bookstore in Pasadena. Titles on Edgar Casey, Nostradamus, Nikola Tesla, UFOs, and more are there. There's also a great selection of crystals, crystal jewelry, ancient stones. And don't forget there are thousands of book titles from astral projections to UFOs and New Age music cassettes. Think Alexandria 2 for the unique holiday gifts for those special people on your list. And now Alexandria 2 is expanded to include a lecture area coming this Monday. A real treat. Lee and Vivian Gladden, our guests tonight, authors of Heirs to the Gods, giving a special first-time lecture and slide presentation of archaeological sites, charts, and more on Monday, November 24th. Then mark your calendars for December 6th. That's Alexandria 2's giant anniversary celebration. You'll meet Dr. Peoples in person there. Reservations are required. I'm going to try to drop by for their birthday. So why don't you call over there, 818-792-7885. That's 792-7885.
We've been researching and working on heirs all of our lives. We began, as so many people in our culture have, with a childhood in which we were steeped in the fundamentalist interpretations of the Bible. And as we grew into adults and went into higher education, we went away from this interpretation of the Bible. And about 10 years ago, things that were happening in the world into which we had moved, science, space science especially, brought our attention back to remarkable parallels between what was being discovered by our own space scientists and the things that we had been taught about the Bible as children. And we began an odyssey of research, which over 10 years has carried us into the most exciting and even mind-blowing frontiers of discovery with regard to a whole host of topics. We're just talking about one of them tonight, and mm-hmm. this is perhaps the most central topic of all in the Bible, and I think it's beginning to be very central now in our own biological revolution. This is the threshold of immortality.
Well, I love what you're saying. That, you know, we see and we hear and I read and I am sent material and I talk to people where this renewed verve or this renewed interest in something new that's happening to the physiology of man
mm-hmm.
is emerging all around us. We had, in fact, quite a convention just last week of some of the top men in the world who realize that what we have been doing in terms of taking care of the physical self has been rather dumb, that we are not using the processes that we were supposed to use from antiquity in order to take care of ourselves. And we have let ourselves become creatures that are born and die, you know, 70 years later or 60 years later or something, when it wasn't supposed to. And we have become creatures that get sick when they are not supposed to. And all at once, creatures that find themselves confronted with all kinds of maladies that they are not to be confronted with. And unfortunately and sadly along the way, we have let the fact that we have let that happen to ourselves become a multi-billion-dollar business.
That's right.
And that leads to, there's some things I can say. There are a lot of people that like it being big business.
How about it there, Ringmaster?
But like what goes into their pockets a lot better than what happens to you as an individual.
Unfortunately.
I'm sorry to get on so boxed. I just do get on it every now and then.
No, we're on it too.
You said it eloquently, Bill. Aging... We've been programmed over the millennia to believe that aging is natural and that death is absolutely natural.
Oh, yes, we're told. There are two things that are for certain, death and taxes.
Yes.
And,
the taxes are certain.
We're not sure about either one of those if you really want to know.
But to go back to our research, which we call archaeolinguistics, and to just acquaint our friends out there with what archaeolinguistics is.
Okay. You're coming in here.
It's the study of
root
words
that
take us back into antiquity, that isolate and identify concepts, alien concepts into the sacred literature. And we found
that
indeed, we do stand on the threshold of mortality.
Okay.
And that we were not intended to die, as we know death.
Mm-hmm.
That we are not supposed to age, and that disease is totally unnatural. The fact that we awaken every morning, that we heal when we've been ill, that in itself, if we were to think about it just for a moment, tells us that if you become ill and you get well, then you can be well
and
forever.
Well and well forever.
Yes.
Yeah. The very first piece of research we did, Bill, on the Bible, began with the tree of life that is described in the opening chapters of Genesis. And all through the Bible, we found that this theme runs like a golden thread, that the idea of a tree of life, the idea of immortality, keeps recurring over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And to our amazement, when we began to turn this tool of archaeolinguistics that we developed on the passages where immortality is discussed and where the tree of life is discussed, we kept running across phrases or concepts, actually, such as coiling and wrapping and rolling and double and helix, which pulled us over and over again to the DNA helix, which is the center of research in our present biological revolution.
Yes, the DNA, which of course is the, I guess you would call that the great computer of our body.
That's right.
That little molecule that is a part of all of us.
It programs everything that we are and can be.
And it is certainly resilient and it changes, but it's a very fundamental part of us. It's wrapped into a helix of protein. Now, I wonder how Moses knew that when he was writing about it.
Isn't that incredible?
See, the point is that we actually found that description. We actually found that word, helix, out of a Greek word, sunliklete, which is, incidentally is related to the word paraclete, the comforter,
mm-hmm.
nurturer. And one of the derivatives of it was co-aged persons, which led to the word helioso, helio, and then the word helix, as Lee said, to coil, to roll, to wrap. And in the Hebrew, we get the same word, but that word is uwl, U-W-L, and it says to coil, to roll, to wrap, and that comes out of Psalms 139 when it talks about are having been fearfully and wonderfully made. And all of our members were in your book when yet there were none of them. And the Hebrew word was golem, which led to the word ul, which gave us the same meaning as the Greek word sundiklit.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever we do, everything, every reference, thousands of them we've been through, lead us back to this immortality factor.
And what we discovered in our research, Bill, almost 10 years ago was that the coiling of the helix has to do with the maintenance of life and vitality and even the extension of life into immortality. And it's when the helix begins to uncoil that you begin to get the inroad of aging and deterioration. Now, we found this almost 7 years before our own biological researchers came upon the same fact. We were amazed about 7 years later to run on to the research of Bob Lippitz, one of the important gerontological researchers today, who has just within the last 3 or 4 years come up with evidence that the uncoiling of the DNA helix, the loosening of its coils, is a prime factor in aging, and that if you could prevent this, you could probably prevent aging and extend life indefinitely. And we discovered a methodology in our own research for preventing this uncoiling, and we've been practicing it.
Mm-hmm. We want to talk about the practice and research, because that in itself is quite fascinating. And we're talking about research, and we're talking about a whole program which is being carried out under the most controlled kind of measures, that it is not happenstance, that it has to be accepted because of just the methodology you're using with the patients that are undergoing this and those that are not undergoing this, and the difference that's happening between those that are and those that aren't, and, you know, wonderful AMA practices that they have to just live by and said, here is the data.
Right.
But let's get back to a little second. We're talking about the research and we're talking about the Bible. I wanted to tie all of this in for those people who may not be familiar with you and the Heirs of the Gods, your
yes.
first book, which
yes.
was certainly astounding in its own way. Let's quickly tell that story about what it is. We have some time. You go ahead.
The second book?
The first book.
All right. How to Win the Aging Game.
Heirs of the Gods.
Heirs of the Gods.
Let's set that foundation down. I want them to know where this information is coming from and who's responsible for it.
All right. What we did, actually, was to take techniques that had been employed in the decipherment of codes during World War II. They were used to break the Japanese code. It's what it's called a grid pattern of analysis, actually. And the same kinds of techniques that had been employed in the breaking of several ancient languages that were unknown, notably Linear B, the language of the ancient people of Crete. And we applied these techniques to clusters of roots that occur at critical passages in the Bible and in other ancient sacred texts. And when we did this, a whole coherent picture of a civilization far advanced beyond our own began to emerge. We've often compared what we did to what was done by Schliemann in the last century when he worked with the Greek texts of Homer.
Mm-hmm.
He came to the conclusion that the works of Homer were not just legendary and mythological, that they referred to actual historical events which had occurred, which no one believed in his day.
Well, usually don't those old legends and myths have roots somewhere in some truth?
I call a myth a high truth. For example, Schliemann, as Lee said, excavated and found that Troy actually existed.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did with the archaeolinguistics, instead of digging for artifacts from antiquity, we dug into the root words, and it yielded up information. Archaeology takes us back into the past, and archaeolinguistics brings us up into the future. And we have information that is yet to come about that we found in the archaeolinguistics left by a civilization billions of years in our technological future.
What we have found is that there are concepts buried in the Greek and Hebrew texts of the Bible that were not discovered by humans until the 20th century. And yet most of the texts of the Bible were written 2,000 to 25 years, 100 years earlier.
Well, one of the things I like to say about Heirs of the Gods is that, you know, most people are familiar in our Judeo-Christian society with the Bible in one way or another.
Yes.
And it has the story that it tells that we're all familiar with.
The bestseller of all time.
The bestseller of all time. But what you found in the Bible was, I would call it an encoded message.
Yes.
That's right.
That was waiting for a more advanced mentality than was here 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago to understand this encoded message. Now, we see this happening all over in the hieroglyphics and the Sanskrit and all of the other, or many of the other ancient things that have been left us by somebody else. And the precision with which the ancients talked to us in that fashion makes it very hard for me to conceive that these were ignorant people, assuming that we, of course, are the smartest people that have ever been on the earth because we are the latest batch. And things progress along as they normally do. We're smarter this generation than the generation before and the generation before. And 2,000 years ago, they were pretty dumb. And we, of course, are the smartest. And if you don't think so, call Caltech. Now, but those people were showing us and telling us and giving us pictures of things that our technology is just now beginning to comprehend.
That's right.
Bill, we found a reference to black holes. The civilization that was here, and of course, you know, you've heard us say so many times they were here and that they are coming back and that we are their recreation, that they created us from the hominids that had already evolved. The information that they had and that we have discovered, futuristic information, could not have been, much of it could never have been understood until this age, until the space age, until the age of high technology.
Because there are references to laser technology, to the DNA, to nuclear fission, to the time dilatation effect that Einstein discovered in the theory of relativity. Clear-cut, undeniable references that could only mean this and nothing else.
There are descriptions of scalar interferometers, and this is probably the newest science that's on the Earth right now.
That's right.
But what
to
I
the
need...
the Sabbath rest.
What I need to point out to the, for those that may not know about Heirs of the Gods, that in going through all of this meticulous effort that you have done, from Genesis all the way through, we see an emerging picture of something else other than what is the picture that most people have of the Bible.
That's right.
It is a picture of a, call it an expeditionary force that came to Earth, what, 35,000, 40,000 years ago, as best as we can pinpoint it, and started to colonize the Earth. But not by bringing their own kind down here and letting them spread, but rather by taking the indigenous life forms of the primates that were here and combining that DNA that you talk about with their own DNA and actually replicating a new species, which we call man. And I suppose we could look and say perhaps that was the Cro-Magnon man, to the best of our knowledge. And the idea was to let this new species of man, which represented the best of the physical characteristics necessary to live on this planet with all of its very local problems for the human being, and combine that with their best attributes, which had to do with their celestial intent, their love of beauty, their love of growing, their love of creating, and to bring this new society now from this planet into being. They came from Arcturus, or a planet around Arcturus, if I have the story correct, and I bet
right.
I do.
But oh, you do, Bill, you do.
But they then ran into a lot of very human problems along the way of the commander of that expeditionary force had a better idea, for whatever his reasons were. He came in disfavor with his boss. He was relieved of his command. And the entire experiment from which we all came was almost wiped out because they could look at it and say, hey, this didn't work. We'll come back and do it again. But then, of course, these were innocents down here, these things that we now would call the human being of Earth. And, you know, history goes on. But all of that comes out of the Bible. And in the Bible, we're seeing stories then, according to your research, of a group of people from a distant planet. What, 35 light years away, I think Arcturus is,
That's
or something
right.
like that. A very advanced society that a part of its national fervor or intent or reason was this colonization of many planets all over the galaxies, of which this was just one. This one just went awry. And it's been going awry ever since.
Ever since.
But you get a very interesting look at it. But what is important and what lays the groundwork for what you're going to tell us tonight is that these ancient writers,